Network, proudly presents The Jay's Blade Show. With your host, CyberGolf.com's own Jay Clemmer, and co-starring a galaxy of the golf and sports world's greatest names as a special guest. Yo, 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 this is your main man, DJ Q, telling you to put your hands together for your friend and mine, Jay Clemmer.
All right, thank you, DJ Q, for bringing us back from the break. He is absolutely right. I am Jay Flama, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. Big thank you to Marino Parasinzo, the man with the double-breaking putt for a last name, but the elegant and eloquent pen. The voice of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette for many years. Also, thank you to Rand Morissette and Tom Doak for coming on the show in the first two segments. It is an extended dance version of the Jay's Plays show. It's our holiday spectacular. Glad to have you aboard for another three more segments. And we're going to bring on our next guest right away. He is one of the great golf course architects in America, a devoted disciple and a man who worked for many years with the great Pete and Alice Dye, and now is on his own and making terrific splashes all across the country. Please give a warm Jay's Plays welcome to Bobby Weed. Bobby, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jay. Always good to chat with you.
Well, thank you. It is always good to chat with you. We've had a lot of fun working together on an article over the past month or so. And now I get the great pleasure of having you on the show. For the benefit of our listeners who might not be familiar with you and your work, take us through a little bit of your history. How did you first get into playing golf?
Well, I started golf as a young youngster, like most folks, and I played all sports. I played basketball, football, and I really played a lot of baseball. And my dad owned property, and I grew up in South Carolina, in the Midlands area of South Carolina. And my dad sold some property to a developer and who built a golf course, and they did not have enough property for a driving range, and we owned all the surrounding land. And I started hanging around down there, and they couldn't run off, and started playing golf and hanging around the club as a private country club, and ultimately talked my dad into giving me some property across the street that we had been farming. I built a driving range on it when I was early in high school, and that really kind of kick-started my career in golf, and it's really the only thing I've ever done.
So walk us through how you went from working out and designing a driving range at the club all the way to being by Pete Dye's side for many of his greatest golf courses.
Well, my grandparents were farmers, and my dad was in the construction business, so I kind of played in the dirt all my life, and played high school golf and played a little college golf, and then studied agronomy and horticulture in college, and ultimately.
And where was that, Bobby?
Well, I played golf up at small college in South Carolina, Presbyterian College, and then I went to, and then I also went to turf school down in Lake City, Florida, and ended up meeting Pete Dye in the mid-70s at Amelia Island Plantation. I was doing an internship there and met Pete there at Amelia Island Plantation, which he had done shortly after doing Harbor Town on Hilton Head in South Carolina, and first met Pete there. And my early mentor was a golf course superintendent, Ron Hill, at Amelia Island Plantation, and who really taught me so much from agronomics, maintenance, and all of the aspects of maintaining and managing a golf course. And that's where I met Pete while working with Ron Hill. And then a couple of years later, Ron Hill told me that Pete was building a golf course in South Carolina in Hilton Head, and thought that I'd maybe a good fit, and I ended up meeting Pete and Alice, and basically they took a bit of a liking to me early on because I was from South Carolina, and they were doing a golf course in South Carolina, Hilton Head, and I had some construction experience and farming experience and a agronomic background and maintenance, and so it seemed like a good fit. So I'm sure they took a big chance on hiring me, but anyway, I met up with them and built the first golf course up there with Pete at Long Cove Club, and also did some work at Harbortown, and that was back in the I would say that was like 80-81 in that stretch, and then from there it just snowballed and continued to work with Pete, and then ultimately came to work for the PGA Tour because Pete had just done the Tournament Players Club at Sawgrass, and it had some issues that the tour players didn't care for too much, and Dean Beeman called Pete and said, we got to make some changes. So Pete's like, well, I've got this kid here and we're finishing up at Long Cove, and I'll send him down there. And from there, it just, you know, it just kept going. And between having a mentor, like starting out with Ron Hill as a golf course superintendent, and then Pete Dye, and then Dean Beeman, that really set the course for me going forward.
Now, you see, you met him at Amelia Island Plantation, one of the loveliest spots in America. I had the great pleasure to spend a week there on two different occasions, playing Pete's course, in fact. And I met no less a personage than Newt Gingrich himself and his lovely wife, and got to play four holes, the last four holes of the course with them. Okay, we were coming to that crossroads where I would go one way to go play, I think it was number 10, and they were coming off number 14 to go play number 15, and they got lost and asked me where the tee was. And I said, well, it's over this way. And I said, he's unmistakable. I mean, there's no one else in the world looks like Newt Gingrich. I said, you're Mr. Gingrich. He said, yes. I said, do you mind if I play the last four holes with you? So, you know, no matter what your politics are, he had continental manners. He was unfailingly nice and polite, and we had a ball for those four holes. It was interesting to have to walk all the way back to the 10th tee to play the last five, but play the middle five of the round. Tell us a little bit about Pete's course in Amelia.
I will tell you, I was fascinated by the golf course at Amelia Island the first time I saw it, which was probably 1975 or 76, right in there. And I was just fascinating. I'd never seen such an interesting, unique golf course, you know, carved in amongst the live oak trees, hard up against the Atlantic Ocean, sandy soil. I mean, I grew up in clay, and to dig a hole, you needed a mattock, and it was just very difficult to dig a hole in rocks and clay. And down there, it was all sand, and you know, I had no issues digging holes down there, working irrigation in that sand. It was great, and greens were so small, and everything about it was so unique, and so much contrast between the fairway grasses being Bermuda and the roughs being Bahia grass, and it was just a fascinating golf course, and I'd never seen anything like it growing up, and I knew that I was, you know, I knew I was at a special spot because Amelia Island was so natural. Everything about Amelia Island Plantation in North Florida was just magical almost. And, so it was a great experience. It was a great golf course. And, it really piqued my interest to the point that, this is something that I knew I wanted to pursue. I wanted to pursue being in the golf business. I knew I wasn't going to be able to make it as a player ultimately, but I wanted to be involved in golf in some aspect. And obviously, the agronomic side of it was intriguing and excellent, and then to be able to be associated with Pete Dye, who I quickly determined was, you know, the guru, was just You know, he was just ahead of his time and so down to earth until this was a good fit for me. And, it really did work out, for the best.
Now, you also mentioned Harbortown. Were you there when Pete was working it with Jack Nicklaus?
No, the golf course was open. They played the first tournament there. And, of which Arnold Palmer
70,
won.
1970.
Yeah. Well, was it 70 or 69?
I think the course opened in 69. It could be 69. I said 70 because I thought the course opened in 69 and that maybe the tournament might have been, but it might have opened for, but either way, yes, Jack was there learning architecture very early. So, when did you go to Harbortown? And then the more important follow-up question is, how did you also learn to study the architecture of the great golden age designers and come to understand strategy as well as natural setting?
Well, I would say my first visit to Harbortown was probably 75, 1975. And what had put Harbortown on the map was Arnold Palmer winning the inaugural Heritage Classic, which back then was played in the fall, not the spring, and which is an ideal time in the Lowcountry. And it was a great golf course, and I had also soon after that I'd been to Amelia Island, so the, you know, Amelia Island Plantation and Harbortown were like two sisters almost in so far as strategy and character and design. And you know, to this day, Harbortown is still one of the great golf courses, particularly from a strategic design. And I did not know at that moment I wanted to be a golf course architect. I just know that I was involved in something very, very special, and it was a bit of a renaissance and transitional period because, you know, growing up with Ellis Maples, Robert Trent Jones type golf courses, big long tees, big fairways, penal style bunkers, big greens, big bunkers, and then going to something that was so petite and so intimate, that Pete Dye had fashioned, both at Amelia Island and Harbortown. I just knew that there was something so unique about what I was experiencing, what I was associated with, that, you know, I just kind of like the old saying, you kind of want to hang around the net. And, that's what I did.
Well, you hang around the net, and that's how you score goals sometimes. So,
That's right.
Now, how did you come to appreciate, learn about, and employ the strategies of the great classic golden age designers?
Well, I didn't know any golden age designers, you know. In some ways, that's the Dead Architect Society, and I was never familiar with any of them. Obviously, I studied, and I've got a great collection of original books, you know, by the likes of George Thomas and the links from Hunter and so many of the great old books that are just classics today. But you know, you can read all those books, but you know what, until you get out in the field and you're actually working in the dirt, so to speak, and with my experience with Pete, you know, he's so hands-on until, you know, I was learning from him, and I was a sponge. Jay, I was an absolute sponge. I didn't know. I wasn't influenced by anyone else in particular. I just knew that I was part of something that was so unique, so exciting, and I just learned so much from Pete until, you know, I developed my style and everything I learned. I developed in the field from Pete. I didn't learn from reading all, I had all the books and I read the books, but it didn't mean near as much as the actual field experience. And, you know, I always remember Pete saying, you show me a golf course built by a set of plans, I'll show you a bad golf course. And I learned early on that great golf courses are built in the field. And I was a sponge for any and everything Pete had to share. And that's going to be one of the great attributes of Pete to his legacy, is the fact that he mentored so many architects that are out there today that are the best in the industry. When you look at the architects that are working and practicing today, that all mentored under Pete. We learned our trade from Pete. We didn't learn our trade from the golden era architects. Pete did more of that, I would say, and he fashioned.
Yeah,
that
Pete was a big fan of Seth Rainer in particular.
No doubt.
And when you go to either Keith the Dog or especially Dot 4, you can count out your angles. Okay, you can count out your options off the tee. It's one of the greatest compliments you can pay a golf course architect. Mike Stranz used to say that all the time. He goes, the best golf courses, you can count your angles off the tee. Now, we always hear the story that down at Casa de Campo, Pete would actually grab a stick and draw drawings in the sand so that people could see what he was doing. Tell us some of the stories about what courses you did design with Pete. And some of the interesting, ideas that happened there and how they were executed out in the field.
Well, first and foremost, Pete was never afraid of making a mistake. Pete was never afraid of doing something and admitting that that's not quite right. That's not what we want, and change it. He was never afraid of making changes to a golf course. And back to your earlier question, while Seth Rainer may have been influenced, Donald Ross was a tremendous influence on Pete, because Pete knew Donald Ross and met Donald Ross up at Pinehurst, and he also loved a guy named Bill Diddle, and also loved Langford and Maru, because they were up at in the Culver, Indiana area, where his wife, where Alice had a home, and Pete played up there. So Pete was influenced by those guys, but he also had a great respect for Robert Trent Jones, believe it or not. He had a tremendous amount of respect. Tremendous amount of respect from Robert Trent Jones. So he drew from a lot of guys. And then, of course, probably the most influential aspect of Pete's design was his trip in the early 60s, 63, 64, to the British Isles with his wife, Alice, when they went over and toured and played so many of those British Isle courses. And he brought a lot of that back and kind of fashioned that into what he had assembled and studied here in the States, and incorporated that in his own style in a most unique way that nobody else had seen before. And we were just, we were just following his lead. We were just listening, and he was so giving. He was always so giving of his information, and would tell you why he was doing what he was doing. But lines and angles were paramount. And to this day, lines and angles are probably the biggest component of Pete's design style and strategy.
Now, quickly before we go to break, one last question. Give us a list of some of the courses that you did with Pete.
Well, we did. I rebuilt the stadium course at TPC a couple of times. Pete always liked to
Fantastic.
Say there should be 90 holes there.
There might as well be, because Pete said to me, he goes, I got that course 25 years ago, and they told me to change it. I'm not about to tell them to say that I gave them 25 years ago. I mean, what do you want me to do?
Exactly. And then we did a course up in Wilmington, North Carolina, called Landfall. Obviously, Long Cove and Hilton Head. among a few and many others that we collaborated on and worked together over the years. And it's just been about a 40 year relationship.
Well, it's been quite fruitful. We're going to get into the next segment very shortly, talk about some of the places that you've been working at, talk a little bit about Rainford and Moreau as well, who you mentioned. Right now, I am Jay Flama. We're going to go to a quick break. You're listening to Jay's Plays on Golf News Net Radio Network.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back at the second half of the show in just a minute.
This is your main man, DJ Q, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network.